You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to TFM's local watering hole for the official 500th episode. And I could not be more excited to be here with none other than my co-host, who honestly really made this possible, because there was a possibility that a long time ago, we'll tell the story in just a second as we get into that. But Christy, it is great to have you back, mainly because, too, we finally get to talk about the finale, the finishing arc of Stranger Things.
Heck yeah. I'm so excited. Thank you for having me on for this. I feel like we had to anyway wrap it up since we started reviewing from season one together. So especially being episode 500, that's incredible. So you should also be very proud to have made this many.
Yeah, thank you so much. You know, it is interesting because, as I was going to say, you know, there was a point where, you know, doing this show, and it's kind of back to this way now, but for you know, the beginning of the show was just about me, and I would pick people to be on the show, and, you know, when you do that long enough, it becomes just a lot of work, because really what you're doing, especially when we were doing it every single week, you're scheduling, right? Mm-hmm. It is about creating a schedule and sticking to it, and then watching the things, and all that stuff, and yeah, I mean, you know, it's a podcast. We don't get paid for this at all. And it became a lot of work. And, you know, when I asked you if you wanted to be the permanent co-host, and you said yes, I mean, that took a huge weight off of me, because then I could just worry about whatever, and we could worry about it together at that point. What are we going to be watching? What sounds good? What sounds fun to talk about? And then if we wanted to bring somebody else on, well, we always knew we were going to at least have us on the show, and then we could, you know, bring in our friends and fun guests that we loved and stuff to talk about things. But yeah, I mean, the fact that we made it to 500 is very much down to you being on the show for so long. So it seems only right, really, that we would be able to reach this official 500 episode together. And so, yeah, I'm just really excited to be here. And, you know, if you would love to give us a gift for our 500th episode, we would absolutely love if you would go over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, places like that, and give us a star rating and review. Especially Apple Podcasts, because it actually really does make a huge difference. Apple is still one of the biggest places to get podcasts, and ratings and reviews make a huge difference. And honestly, we haven't had a new review for 2 years. So
wow.
Please, yeah, hit us up with some reviews, and we actually read those out in the show when we get them. So you can do that to help the show. You can also find us all over social media and follow us, interact with us, share us on social media. So we're over on X, Twitter, at the 602 Club. We're also on Instagram at the 602 Club TFM. We've got the entire network, of course. You can follow on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. Got the listeners only discussion group there called the Babel Conference. And you can talk to listeners from all over the world about the different shows that are happening. Plus, you can find us online at trek.fm and see all of the shows that we've got going on. And those are all the ways you can support us. And if you like what we do, you can go over to Patreon at patreon.com/trekfm and become part of the team and help make sure that we can keep this content, keep coming to you. So, Chrissy, I think I don't know if you feel this way. So I wanted to start here. It's kind of a strange place to start. But, you know, the release schedule was they were going to have a volume one, a volume two, and then you were going to have a week, and then you would have the finale.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you, with this release schedule, did having volume two and then divorcing the finale from that and having it a week later, do you feel like that hurt just the overall experience of volume two itself and just the amount of episodes that we got. And then, you know, you are left on a note of there's not really a cliffhanger because everything is just building towards the finale. So I wonder for you if you felt like that maybe was just a mistake for them not to just do, you know, all of volume two at one time.
I get logically why that would make more sense. And also, since it had been streaming on Netflix, that's the usual format, right? They drop everything all at once. But I actually liked the buildup this time, especially with it being the final season for sure. And then also, I remember telling you how excited I was that they planned for the finale to be shown in theaters and how huge that is, especially now after, you know, we're 6 years now post COVID, to be able to do that, especially with something that was only on streaming. So I'm actually okay with it because I got to go see the finale in the theater as well.
That's cool. We thought about it and we looked and there just weren't any good times in all of the seats that were good anyway, were taken. So yeah, we just watched it at home. I would say for me, I think that they made, I think they made a big mistake.
Oh.
And with the release schedule. And I think the mistake that I see really happening there is that volume one leaves you on a cliffhanger that's built you up with all of this suspense, and then it gives you this big reveal, and then you're just left with that, right? Which is building straight into the volume two. Volume two, though, without the finale, doesn't have any of that. It doesn't have any narrative tension between the end of the final episode before the finale and the finale, because everything is meant to resolve with the finale.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no great cliffhanger that's there. There's no great narrative tension. It's more like, oh, my streaming froze for a week, and now I can continue. That's what it seemed like to me. And I also, too, and I wanted to ask you this. These episodes in Volume 2, did you feel like we needed this many episodes in this Volume 2, or did you get the sense of possibly that, you know, this could have been maybe two episodes in the finale instead of the three in the finale?
Yeah, that's how I felt. I thought some things definitely could have been condensed more. And certainly that there were areas where a certain scene lasted too long. You know, some editing could have been made. Did mm-hmm. you feel the same?
Yeah, I don't know. I have not. You know, I know that the documentary has come out about the final season, and I have not watched it yet. I have not gotten a chance to watch it. And so I've heard some things, you know, about the final season, some interesting things, like the fact that they hadn't actually finished the final episode before they started filming, which seems really weird because, you know, they had like 45 years to do that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but it is... You know, I would say I think that chapter 5, 6, and 7 could have absolutely been condensed down, and really, I think it felt like to me what it just really needed was, like you said, some editing, and even just like story editing, and really crafting this so that, if you want to have this be your release schedule, because this, to me, the release schedule and the episodes and all this, it felt more like some places we were trying to kind of fill time more so than everything being really, really important.
Yes.
You know, I felt like the volume one, there probably could have been some editing here and there, but for the most part, I thought it was all really well done. I thought it was good. And again, that finale for volume one was just fantastic. And so, I don't know, it didn't feel as polished as you would have thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with all of the time that they had.
Yeah.
To make this happen, you know? Like, that's the part that I feel like is kind of crazy, is that they had a ton of time.
Right, between
to figure this season
four
out.
Four and five, you know? Between seasons. Yeah, they had, what was it, 2 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, right? At any point, so, could have said, can we make this only the essentials? Because that's the thing you and I have talked about many times also on this podcast, are some of the best movies are the things where it feels like everything is important and it doesn't go over time just to stretch out for time's sake and be like, we're a 3-hour movie. You know, what's a 3-hour movie if you feel like you're bored halfway through? So I will say specifically with volume two, I felt that way with Escape from Kamazots.
Yeah, I think it's just it is obviously very interesting, and you know, when you're trying to bring something to a close that's had, you know, this kind of cultural footprint, I get it. It's difficult, and I think that what I find is, with all of the time that they had to put this together, it seems like this should be just the most polished thing that you could imagine. And you would hope it to be, too, because, again, everybody's looking at you for this many years waiting for it to happen. And, you know, you got to be able to deliver. So one of the things about this is really important, obviously, is answering questions. And, you know, they talked significantly about this idea that this was going to be a season that was going to answer questions. We were not going to leave questions unanswered. That was their goal, is to try to not leave questions unanswered for this series. So when it came to, you know, things like the Upside Down and, you know, where it came from and how all that happened, answering questions about, you know, Henry and Venkna, all of that, we were really going to do, they were going to do all they could to make sure that fans didn't have lingering questions left, which I really appreciate. I think that's, you know, in a season like this, in a show like this, that's based upon its mythology, you know, don't get me started with the way in which Lost got lost. you know, this is specifically not trying to do that, right? They really do want to wrap this up. So, all that said, one of the big questions is the abyss. And actually, when I say the abyss, figuring out, okay, what is the Upside Down, you know? And where does it come from? And how did it come to be? And, you know, Venkna and how he came to be, and the fact that we learned that, you know, Henry actually wasn't always evil. He gets possessed by the Mind Flayer, and that is what leads him to be the character that he turns into. And of course, he has a choice to not be that, but he continually chooses to be that. And so I wanted to ask you, did you feel like all of the answers that we got about the Upside Down, you know, it actually being a wormhole basically between dimensions, that all of this made sense?
I would say for the most part, yes. I will say, first of all, since you mentioned that specifically about Henry, I liked that he was not redeemed. Sometimes it's a better story to say he's just evil. You know, he has no interest in change, even though it wasn't his fault, and they see the way it happened, and you know, you see him go through the emotions of realizing again why he didn't want that memory anymore. I'm glad that ultimately he's like, but this is who I am now.
Yeah, this is what I want. I can I continually actually choose this, even though I have the choice not to.
Right. I do think that it did help them to write the Upside Down and the Abyss the way that they did, as far as a problem solving technique of having matter dissolving and eventually, you know, that black hole of everything disappearing into nothing.
Yeah.
Because that solves your problem of getting into wormholes and time travel and getting things really complicated by just saying it disappears. But I think that it doesn't answer the question of the original piece of matter that infected Henry, where it came from,
how that got there,
right? Or if maybe there's any pieces still left, because we didn't actually see if everything went through the black hole and disappeared forever, or, you know, what the deal is with that. And maybe that was obviously it was intentional, because of the way they wanted Elle to possibly die. But for me, it still kind of left it open-ended.
Yeah, I think, you know, you rightly point out there are things that we still don't have complete answers on. You know, I think this interesting aspect of the exotic matter and the connection between the Upside Down, our world, and the Abyss, where all the, you know, the alien creatures come from. We'll talk about that later. But, you know, where the Demigorgons and the Demidogs and all of these things supposedly came from. And the fact that, you know, we've had, you know, throughout the series, especially with their teacher, you know, these scientific ideas kind of playing into this kind of strange, almost mythological existence that we're living in with people with powers and all this kind of stuff. And I think that is all nicely answered, how all that kind of comes together. And I do like that it's like we're going to answer the most important questions, but the goal here is not to get bogged down necessarily in minutia on every single thing.
Sure.
We do need to just make sure that you kind of have all of the big lingering questions, such as, you know, what is the Upside Down? How does it come to be? And the biggest thing I thought that was interesting is the choice to explain Henry and utilize that as the basis for how there's a connection then between our world and the Upside Down, and of course the Abyss, and tying all that together. And that answers a bunch of questions. Like, I didn't realize that I would be interested really in knowing, you know, how did Henry get to be how he is, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that, like you said, makes for such an interesting storyline point, because, you know, so many times we offer the villain a chance at redemption and they take it and all of that. And so to not do that, I thought was a really good choice. You know, I think it's the same choice that would have been much more interesting in the sequel trilogy of, you know, Star Wars, to not have Ben Solo be redeemed in that sense.
Yeah.
You know, to just be a character who has the choice, but then just chooses to continue to be evil. And so, yeah, I mean, I come away from the series in that sense not feeling unsatisfied by the answers that I was given about the major mysteries of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I'm not frustrated that I don't have all the minutia answered. And I think that's a tightrope you have to walk anytime you're going to create a story that has a deep mythology. You have to be very aware of the things that you need to answer and the things you don't need to answer for the audience to come away satisfied. And I think they, I don't feel unsatisfied at all with any of the answers that we got. And I don't feel unsatisfied with any of the answers, you know, to questions we didn't get. So.
And one other piece, just because I'm not sure where else it would fit in, but it was odd that after everything disappears, so does the military and Dr. K. That was a big question for me that I was like, could we have had some kind of resolution for them? Did you feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, it is very interesting. And I guess the only answer that seems to make sense is that because Elle's gone, or at least they think she's gone, right? Mm-hmm. And because they think she's gone, then there isn't, that was the main point of her being there. You know, Dr. K was after Elle to try and create more versions of Elle.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, because she's gone, she doesn't see any reason to stay. But I do agree with the point that it does almost just feel too fast, you know? Like, it seems like there should be more to this because, yeah, in a lot of ways, Dr. K is really just a pawn of plot.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just doing the things we need her to do to stand in the way when we need her to stand in. And then in the moment she's not important, we get rid of her, you know?
Yeah.
And that's very different from Dr. Brenner, right? Papa. He is pivotal to the story and to the character, especially of Elle. And yet we have this Dr. K come in, and she's really not pivotal to the story at all, again, except as a plot device to stand in the way of our characters. And that's not really satisfactory. And I do think in some ways, you know, because we had him die, we don't have anybody else necessarily to pick up that mantle and to be interesting as a foil. And on like the military side, the kind of human side, other than, you know, the main villain here is really Henry and Venkna. But I wish in some ways, I think that might be one of the places where this series would have been benefited, is having set up better who the successor to Brenner was going to be.
Yes.
Than just this character that doesn't really end up meaning much to the story. And I guess, you know, we'll talk about it with the very, very end and how she, I guess, have some impact on the story in some ways, but it just doesn't feel like, you know, I don't know. I'm not Linda Hamilton. I'm not excited that she's on screen when she's on screen, because she doesn't really have a lot to do other than to look menacing and yell at people.
Right.
So
she's disposable.
Yeah. Yeah. So, To me, if there's anything in the season that was really the most meaningful and the most enjoyable to watch, and I would say I think that this was probably the best episode of the Volume 2, which was the escape from Kamazotz with the return of Max. I loved it. I thought it was great. With one caveat, why they spend 45 minutes talking in front of their portals instead of just jumping through, or finding a way to have that conversation happen as they're like journeying to the portals. And then it's just like, it made zero sense that they are standing there. I mean, you know, all the memes are like, yeah, I went and got McDonald's, you know, in the time frame that, and they were still talking when I got back. You know, it was pretty ridiculous. Other than that, though, I mean, the relationship of Max and Lucas, I thought, was just fantastically done. You know, the way Karen comes in and saves the day by blowing up an oxygen bottle in a dryer was just phenomenal. I mean, that scene was so good. It was kind of ruined by the fact that you're seeing these two characters stand there forever in a place where, you know, the last time we saw her there, she was easily tracked down and taken back, you know? And so, but otherwise, man, I was so glad to see, you know, Max return. And it was kind of sad because she unfortunately doesn't get a ton to do. But I did enjoy the way they then utilize her character with Elle and Kali to kind of help her navigate the minefield that is Vecna's mind. I thought that was really clever. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. What did you think about her return?
I agree with you as well, as far as there could have definitely been some editing down of that scene as they're about to go through their portals. I did really appreciate, though, that they didn't make it an easy out for Holly, because that also wouldn't have made sense for her story, because she was actually still holed up in the actual creature in the abyss. And so she wouldn't be able to just go through back to her living room. So that all made sense. But yeah, I was so thrilled when we see Max come out. And then in this piece, getting to see her and Lucas reunite, I think it was so adorable that they have her ask him if he's sick of running up that hill now as a song. And he says, yes.
Yeah, because, I mean, we all are, too, at this point.
I don't know. I still love it, but I get it. But, yes, I mean, she was always such a great character, and that scene was one of the best scenes of the last season of her running through. So it was great to finally get her back and able to do things. But, yes, I think there could have been some editing down of some of the talking and journeying through Henry's mind with her and Holly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're 100% right, because I do think this is part of the place where this section just felt excessive, that we were spending too much time without them being able to figure things out of, you know, kind of how to escape his mind and everything. And yeah, there just needed to be a lot of editing work. And, you know, yeah, this isn't on the outline, but do you maybe just think that each of these sections should have just been like 2 hour movies or 2.5 hour movies? So you had 3 2.5 hour movies or 2 hour movies, and that should have just been what they did?
Actually, yeah, that could have been cool. It would fit that structure.
Yeah. I mean, that was, I'll throw it throw him a bone. You know, I don't love doing it, but, you know, John Mills had that idea, and I actually think he's right. Yes, John is sampling this right now, so that he can just play it back whenever he wants to make himself feel better about himself. I think that would have worked better, because then you could have had, you know, the other 2 hour movies, you know, be volume one and volume two, and then this be a third volume, be volume three, right?
Yeah.
Of season five. And then you could have structured things differently. So each one kind of finds a cliffhanger moment, and then you dive into that third and final, you know, and that could even maybe be, you know, 2 hours, 15 minutes, 2 hours, 20 minutes, if you want, you know, to give you the time to really wrap things up. So, you know what's hard, Chrissy? Breaking up is hard to do.
True.
And I wanted to ask you about the breakup of Jonathan and Nancy, and how you thought that was handled. Because I don't know about you, but I had a lot of people be like, did they break up? Was that a breakup? What happened there? That seemed very unclear.
So I agree a little bit. I think that the script of how they word things could have been done less clunky. But I loved that scene, and I thought it was really had a lot of weight to it, and I was hanging on every word. I think especially because it feels like there's high stakes there. It does genuinely feel like they could die. They could disappear into this gloopy matter or antimatter and be gone from the show. So I really appreciated it. I felt like it was due at this point because we've seen Nancy and Jonathan originally come together because of the trauma they had been through, but over time just slowly grow more apart and wanting different things. And so I felt like it had reached a peak where this had to happen. But yeah, could it have been written a little better? Sure. What did you think?
Yeah, I think that you put it well in the sense that it made sense. There was this distance that was forming between them, you know, and there is this understanding that what's keeping them together is the fact that they do share this thing that nobody else understands, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're finding themselves being pulled away from one another, and they don't know how to bring it up to the other. And you know, I think there's a reality to that. You know, when you just realize that it relationship is ending, it's never easy. And so I didn't necessarily have a problem with them, you know, breaking up. I didn't not understand what was happening. I wasn't confused at all. I got, oh yeah, they're not together anymore. But I do completely get the fact that it just felt like they were trying to be clever and their cleverness got them in trouble.
Yes.
You know, be clear instead of clever.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can be clever while being clear, do that. But if you can't, just be clear, you know. And so the way in which they were trying to kind of be super cute and creative with this felt like they were trying so hard. And you never want to. You never want to feel like that, because the moment they're like, I unproposed to you and everything, it just went from being this really poignant moment to being like, okay, what?
Right.
Like, so for
is
a quick second.
Proposing
and
or?
Just be like, it's awkward. So yeah, I didn't think that was their best choice for the season. And you know, we'll talk about kind of later where everybody ends up and everything. But, you know, if that's the choice that you want to make for where the characters are going to be by the end of the season, I mean, again, there's nothing wrong with that, you know. And I think they had kind of set up in the first volume that their relationship feels strained. And yet, yeah, you just, you want to, again, this is the kind of thing where it's like, if you have that long to write a season of television, you should be nailing every single one of these moments. You know, there shouldn't be anything that anyone kind of like feels unclear about when you have this much time. And this is another place where there's kind of a stumble where there shouldn't be, and something that should just feel poignant and heartrending and very emotional. And like you said, you know, them thinking they're both going to die or whatever, and realizing, you know what, I'd rather die telling this person that I care about the truth than not.
And yeah.
So,
and one thing I will add, though, that was the sweet part of that scene was that they're realizing, if this is really the end, like you said, I want to confess things that I've been holding back. And the confessions were really funny. Like Nancy going, I hate the Clash. And he's like, okay, point taken.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and that, you know, that's part of, I think, young relationships too, you know, where you are less willing to be honest because you're afraid you might lose the person. And what you realize in the end is it's better just to be honest from the beginning.
Yeah.
About the things that you really care about. So these type of things don't happen. And so with the final showdown, you know, we finally get to the abyss. We have this final showdown with Vecna. And I wanted to ask you how you thought it ended and what you thought of the whole thing and you know, them going up basically a bit against the main big villain, which turns out to be the Mind Flayer. But at the same time, I just also needed to ask you just about the Abyss itself. It's like, for a place that supposedly spawned all the demi things, you know, the demi gorgons, the demi dogs, and all of these things, right? Mm-hmm. This place seems pretty empty.
Yes.
Seems kind of strange that you don't see any, you know, any other beings other than the Mind Flayer, where you would think this place would be crawling with them, since that's where they come from. I don't know. So, yeah, in the end, how did you feel like that final showdown goes?
So, I will add to that and say, I definitely felt that was a big piece that was left out, felt forgotten, especially after we lost Eddie to all of the demo bats.
Yep.
You know, it's like, what are they trying to convince us that all of those just lived in the Upside Down? And so we're in a separate place from that. So there isn't anything there. Or like you said, is this where they originated from? Then there should be all of them there plus other things. So it did feel inconsistent and forgotten as far as the creatures go and their origin. I will say I liked the final fight overall with the Mind Flayer and how it, you know, gets up and you realize the whole time you were seeing a heart beating above Vecna inside the room he was in. And that final fight is like how you would fight the boss in a Dungeons and Dragons battle. You know, you can't do it just with one character fighting. It has to be the entire party and everybody has a role in their
Leroy Jenkins.
Exactly. You know what I'm talking about. But, you know, like taking hits here and there over time to wear it down finally. So I thought that was great and fit well within their, you know, addition to Dungeons and Dragons throughout the show. Did it necessarily make a lot of sense with Dustin and Steve being underneath it, stabbing it, and the goo coming out? Not really. I don't know what effect that had. Or Nancy.
A lot, Christy. Apparently a lot.
Sure. Okay. They were bleeding it dry, I guess.
What are you going to do? Bleed on
right?
me?
And how is Nancy suddenly great with a machine gun?
I mean, Nancy was basically the Rambo
right?
of this series.
Or Ripley.
So, yeah.
So, I mean, I guess I like that reflection of maybe some 80s lore that's it's inspired by, but it didn't make a ton of sense as to how she would get to that point in her use of weaponry. But overall, I thought it was good. It made sense in those big senses. And liked the overall world building other than the missing of the creatures. What did you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the fact that, you know, the Mind Flayer basically looked like the castle in Dark Crystal.
Oh yeah.
It's literally it is almost identical to that look. That's exactly what they're going for, which makes sense because, you know, the Dark Crystal is all about this infection that's happened, right, mm-hmm. to this world and how it's being sucked of its life, you know. And so, again, this is another place where the Duffer Brothers are utilizing their love of 80s films and 80s genre movies to pull into theirs. And I thought all that worked. I mean, at the same time, you know, I think it is a huge disservice to get to this final battle and none of the things that you've had to face in the Upside Down are there anymore. And to think that all of the things in the Abyss universe have just escaped to the Upside Down or made their way to the Upside Down, that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think it really did feel like somebody had not put a ton of thought into this final showdown, other than the fact that we have to face off with Vecna and the actual Mind Flayer itself. And in those senses, I thought that was pretty good. You know, the fact that they were able to climb those cliffs so fast seemed a little weird too.
Right.
You know, there's just a lot of things I feel like that especially Volume 2 did not feel, and I'm just lumping the finale in with Volume 2 because that's really where it belongs, mm-hmm. but like it just wasn't as well thought out as you would think it would be for people who had years to write the final season of this show, and you would think everything would be meticulous. And this is one of those places where it just definitely did not feel meticulous. You know, though Joyce getting to chop off Vecna's head was like, that was fantastic because, you know, I thought that they actually did a pretty good job of having those characters, right, who have been so impacted by this, finally get their release.
Yes.
And, you know, Joyce, I think in many ways is this unsung character who has had just almost everything taken away from her, you know, with her son, you know, being possessed and used by this being, and, you know, had her entire town put in jeopardy. She's had people that she's loved actually ripped away from her and killed. And so to have her be able to, you know, land the final blows, you know, I thought that that was great. I thought it was a really strange choice, too, in this final showdown, that Hopper's not there.
Yeah.
That was a kind of... It felt like there were just... There was a point in where they were trying to service too many characters there at the end. And they weren't necessarily, I think, paying off the finale with the characters who should have been there.
Yes.
And I think, you know, Hopper, if you ask me, had earned the right to be at the end fighting Vecna and not just be somewhere else. Like, that, to me, was incredibly strange. So...
That's an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up because I didn't think about that. And I mean, you're absolutely right because he's always been the one to go in first and try to protect Elle from all of that, even though he knows that she's got stronger power than he does against it. And I have to add, too, that it was pretty painful seeing him think he shot Elle. So I think that,
yeah,
you know,
that whole scene was rough.
It was overall interesting seeing Henry get inside Hopper's mind. But that piece of it, I don't know that we needed that. Because I think that for me, that went a little too far.
Yeah, I don't know if it went too far. It what was interesting about it was the way in which it kind of felt obvious to me as a viewer, and it made me wonder why Hopper didn't think about that, you know?
Yeah, that it could be an illusion.
But, yeah, it you know, in the end, it's neither here nor there. I think that they did a pretty decent job. And so I wanted to ask you about this, and it's a weird way of putting it, but does Kali have meaning in this? And is... the meaning only really meaningful if what Mike envisions happened to Elle actually happened?
I think, personally, no, I don't think they needed to bring her back if this is the way they were going to wrap it up for her. Because I think how they had initially set it up at the beginning of season 5... it seemed like they were going to require having Elle and Kali together have to combine their powers in order to defeat Vecna. And that would make sense because if you're thinking big picture of how big and powerful the Mind Flayer is plus Vecna, that maybe you would need that much additional power in order to vanquish him. So I think having her sacrifice herself and Elle have to go on alone and then possibly say that Elle survived cheapens the need for having Collie there at all. Would you say the same?
Yeah, I think this is the interesting thing for me, is that I don't think it makes sense to have Collie back if Elle didn't survive. So thinking about the end, I think that Collie being back actually is legitimized if her last act is to bring safety to Elle. And the fact that Elle doesn't have to die, but she's not going to get to live with, you know, her friends. Mm-hmm. And part of that is the other part where we talked about, like, with General K. If that's always a threat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then it does make sense that Elle can't have a normal life. And so in that way, I can appreciate the bringing of Collie and the character of Kay, because they do have a major impact then on this character. She doesn't get to be with Mike. She doesn't get to have the life that they talked about, right? That's not a possibility, basically, for a person with her powers. It's just not going to happen. But at the same time, you know, I then feel as though the bringing Collie back actually makes more sense. It doesn't make sense to me if that's not actually what happened to Elle.
Mm-hmm.
So
I get what we're saying. Basically, you're feeling like you don't need Collie if Elle also dies.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And for me, I didn't mind either way with that. I felt like you don't need Collie if she and Elle aren't required to pair up together to fight Vecna.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Elle is, they do have to, I mean, there is a point where, you know, she's important because she allows the kids to get away from Henry. And so that part she plays is decent. Again, she becomes more of a plot device than she does an actual character.
Right.
But I think there's more meaning to her being able to die to do something that allows Elle to survive.
Mm-hmm.
That has meaning for her actually as a character than if she wasn't there. And therefore, you know, when I think about the end for Elle, as, you know, connected with this, I think Elle did survive. Like, I think it doesn't make sense for them to insert this character and have zero meaning, basically, for her really being there. There could have been other ways you could figure out, you know, to do all those things without actually bringing her back. She's most pivotal in the end to having this character be able to live some sort of life outside of all this. And so, you know, I'm like, yeah, she found a way to make her life have meaning before she died by giving, you know, life to her friend, you mm-hmm. know, so that she actually does get to survive. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. The only issue I would have with that, sorry to go down another rabbit hole, is that Collie's whole crux of the situation was that if either of them survived, the military could still find a way to use them to create more people with powers. And I get what you're saying, obviously, that she ended up possibly going someplace where they couldn't find her. But it's also the military. And we've got, you know, CIA and all of that. So I don't necessarily think she's always going to be safe if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing again, too. Like, the way that it happens, and because, you know, Collie has the power to make you see what she wants you to see, and Kay doesn't realize that's happening. It's like, I think the 11 can be safe if she never contacts anybody she knows, which is why that end again does work for me. And I do believe that L is there, because it all makes more narrative sense if that's actually the case. But it also makes sense as to why she could never contact any of those people again, because the moment she did, she would put all of their lives in danger, especially hers, and do the very thing to which, you know, we would all be worried about, which is, you know, creating another issue by creating another version of her. And, you know, in some ways, she becomes like, and this is the Star Wars reference, you know, she becomes like the Jedi during the dark times, right? She can't really use her powers very much, if at all, even to really save people. Otherwise, she might be found out, you know? So,
But I will say, I think the nice thing about this is that they left it sort of like a choose your own ending for her, where the overarching thought is that Elle probably sacrificed herself and she is gone, but that Mike is introducing the idea of, wouldn't it be nice if this was the actual outcome?
Wouldn't it be nice if we were older?
There you go.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. So I like that, because that way you kind of make everyone happy, in a sense of, if you felt like Elle should have sacrificed herself and she's gone, then you could feel like that's happened. And if you'd like the thought that maybe Elle did survive and she's able to still continue a life somewhere else, that Mike has that in his mind.
Yeah, no, I agree. So quickly, you know, one of the things that that you mentioned was just kind of the pivotal role of music. And, you know, in many ways, music is a really important part of this series. And what did you think as we wrapped up, you know, the final volume here of, you know, the music they chose for this finale?
I will say I 90% loved it. I felt like one or two of the songs were a little on the nose choices for a sentimental song, like Landslide or putting in Heroes from David Bowie. All excellent songs that also would have fit the time period. But I think the real songs that shined through more than anything were the choice of Purple Rain by Prince, and the way that it fit that scene so well. I've seen countless memes now on Instagram reels of people going, I can't hear Purple Rain now and not cry because I'm thinking of Mike and Elle. It was such a good scene, and the music for that was perfect. And then, even though it is a little on the nose, I'm always going to love the song Heroes. So I thought it was still a good choice. And then, you know, there were some funny pops here and there of when Max is skateboarding, playing the Pixies, just kind of fit her vibe in that scene. And also that, like, she's back, she's healthy, she's having fun, you know, and she and Lucas get to have a cute moment.
I think you just said it really well. I think all of it is good. You know, I don't think none of it was like a super standout to me, in the sense of like, oh, that song, you know, I think it, but it was all good. And I didn't, you know, dislike any of it. It didn't have for me quite the same impact of some of the other seasons that they'd had were music that they chose. You know, especially, you know, you think of like with Eddie's death kind of thing, where that was just such a big moment. There you go.
Wore my Metallica shirt for this.
you know, that was, I mean, that stuff was just really genius in that sense. This was good though. I don't have a problem with it. So, the epilogue, of course, is a big part of this episode, the finale. And so what did you think of the epilogue and where everybody ends up?
This was probably my favorite part of the finale, because I think, for one, you owe it to your fans after watching the show for 10 years and being so dedicated and wanting to see where everything will end up, that you have this way of gently letting people come to their own conclusions about things, but also having these moments where you're taking a beat for your main characters to wrap up their stories. And I think especially bringing it back to where we started with Mike and his friends playing Dungeons and Dragons in the basement was perfect. And then having them take a moment to put their folders away and walk up the stairs was a fitting way of saying we're coming to a close. And then also leaving it open to a new generation by having Holly starting her own campaign with her friends and teaching them about it was great. I loved the wrap up for Hopper and Joyce. I loved Joyce finally getting happiness in Hopper too. And Dustin's graduation speech and the reveal of his t-shirt and everything. It was great. The one thing I would change about this, because now we can actually say it, I wanted Steve and Nancy to end up back together. So I did love the joke between Steve and Jonathan about Jonathan saying, so you told her you wanted 6 nuggets, huh? And he goes, should I have said 4? That was very cute. But for all of the buildup they gave Steve and Nancy in the last season, and for Eddie telling Steve, nobody jumps in immediately without thought to save somebody from the upside down, unless it's real love. To then leave it of, Nancy's her own independent woman and she doesn't need either one of them. I think it was just wrong. I think she should have been with Steve.
I agree with you on every single front. I think that there's a disproportionate amount of media that wants to strip away things from female characters that many women find to be important. And want to pretend as though that the only choice that you can make for strong female characters is for them to go off and be their own person and need nobody. If we learned anything from this show, is that we all need people,
mm-hmm.
right? And that people are important, and they're the only things that matter, because they're the only things that give us love and all of those things. And so, yeah, I was kind of disappointed that they made that choice for them. You know, I loved that Steve survived and you have this kind of wonderful bromance with him and Dustin. And honestly, what it really is that, that slightly older brother vibe. You know, you see, Dustin doesn't have a dad, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Steve kind of fills that role a little bit of like almost like an older brother or maybe like a young father type figure to him. Is also somebody who, strangely enough, kind of helped teach him what it meant to be a good man. Because in the end, Steve turns out to be a good man, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we watch Steve grow into that. And so, yeah, I mean, I thought that the epilogue was really good. It was probably the best part of the season. In that sense of like just watching these characters move on. And like you said, I think the most important part of this is those main characters like Mike and Dustin and Lucas and Max and Will, all they're moving on with their lives. And this show is all about what it means to grow up. And mm-hmm. that there is a point where you have to put the toys on the shelf and move on to the next phase of life. And a big part of that, too, I think what the epilogue really brought home was that it did almost feel as if the show was saying something very meta, which was that these kids had their childhood stolen from them.
Yeah.
And what we're watching, in our world is that children are having their lives stolen from them with smartphones and technology and social media and all of this stuff. And all of the studies and all of the science are starting to show us that it is terrible for kids what we're allowing them to do, and we have basically handed them a time bomb, and we've allowed it to go off, and it's destroying generations of kids. And in some ways, I think this show is a meta contextual discussion of what happens when childhoods are stolen, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'll never be the same again. And I found that to be really interesting, kind of bringing this back when, you know, they're all at graduation. That somehow Max graduates, even though she missed like 2 years of school. apparently she got special commendation or something or whatever. But you watch them graduate, right? And you just realize, yeah, these kids have had their entire high school stolen from them. You know, in the same way that a lot of people with COVID had everything stolen from them when it came to school for like 3 years. Mm-hmm. And we're watching the repercussions of all these things happen. So I just thought that was really interesting with the finale. And yeah, you know, look, I'm glad that they didn't go the whole route where everybody dies or a bunch of people die or whatever. Yeah, you didn't need that. And I thought it was really well done. And I liked it. Christy, all that said, what's your final verdict on the series, and what would you rate volume 2/finale?
So I will say for just volume 2/finale, overall, I ended up kind of a 70-30 split on 70% loving it, 30% having some pretty big things I would have changed. Hence, you know, mentioning Steve and Nancy, I would have kept together, had them reunited. The whole military disappearing was weird. The monster fight could have been a little better, but definitely a lot to love here. And like I said, really appreciate them taking a beat to let you as a fan experience the joy of seeing things wrap up, but also the grief of this being the end. I definitely cried. so I'm really going to miss it. And that feeling of watching the first episode for the first time and getting so enveloped in this. I will say, so for my rating just for volume 2 in the finale, I give it a 3.5 out of 5, which I think is consistent with some of the stuff I've said. So, but overall for Stranger Things, 4.5 out of 5. Yeah, it's been an incredible ride, and I wouldn't have wanted to miss it.
Nice.
What about you?
Honestly, I think we're at the exact same spot. I, in the sense of like with this volume 2 finale, I think 3.5 is good. Maybe it's 3.25. I don't know. Again, like we mentioned, I think there just was a serious need of editing, and strangely enough, I think there was a serious need of having thought out the ending more than it felt like they did. And so as for the series overall, I think I need to rewatch it at some point to see how it all holds together. Because, you know, I haven't gone back and rewatched seasons 1, 2, 3, or 4. And I don't know. You know, because of that, I can't really say what I think the final verdict of the series is. It's not a, you know, I think Ed's well enough, but I'd be really interested just to kind of see, like, if you were to watch like a blitz through all 5 seasons, how does it hold together, right? Yeah. And you can only really, I think, make that determination when you have that ability. You know, I know a lot of people hated the end of Game of Thrones, but I'm one of those people who watched the series just back to back to back. And to me, I didn't have a problem with the finale because it all made sense watching it in a short time period. And there's something about this, and we've talked about it many times, but when you make people wait forever for seasons of shows, they build up in their minds what they want it to be, and it can really hurt the final product. I think this could be one of those things where it'd be really interesting to see how it all holds up all together as a series. now that it's finished. So I'll look forward to going back and being able to do that. But Christy, if people wanted to catch up with you, maybe talk about, you know, all 500 episodes here on the 602 Club, some of their favorites, maybe things that they wish that we would do here in the future, where can people find you?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. And of course, you can always find me on Instagram at BespinBell. And I still have a page on X, but I don't check it very often. And then on Facebook, under my actual name, Christy Morris. And I will say I've actually gotten into a book series now. Somebody got me into Fourth Wing. So I don't know, Matt, if you've heard about it or read any of it, but I finished the first book in 2 weeks and it was incredible. So if anybody else out there is interested in talking about Fourth Wing, I may not have a podcast about it, but you can come and chat to me.
Nice. Well, of course, I'd love to talk to people about 602 Club and their favorite episodes and things all over social media. My name is Matt Rushing 02. So just look for that on that platform and you'll find me if I'm there. And so you can also find me here on the network talking about all of our favorite Star Trek shows. Chris Jones and I have a lot of great Star Trek talk happening here on the network. Plus, you can find me over on the Nerd Party Network, one with a completed show called Outpost about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And you can also find me doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But thank you so much for joining us.
And y'all come back now, you hear? Mm-hmm.